At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Across the Sky is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard in severe weather. Choose Weather Call.
Hello once again, everybody. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett, and welcome to Across the Sky, our national Lee Enterprises weather podcast. Lee Enterprises has digital and print news operations in more than 70 locations across the country, including my home base in Richmond, Virginia. I'm joined by my meteorology colleagues from Across the Sky, Matt Holliner in Chicago, Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, and Joe Martucci at the beautiful New Jersey shore. Okay, everyone, so Memorial Day is here, and it begins the traditional summer travel season. Of course, weather often will play a role. So I want to start by asking, what's the one trip you're really looking forward to this summer? Kirsten, let's start with you.
So we are going up to Northern Michigan later this summer, which will just be a nice break from the heat, because that heat is going to come in and it's going to settle in hard here in Tulsa in the next week or two. And I'm telling you, I'm already over it. Like, it's getting up to like almost 90, which is not even close to how bad it's going to be, because we're going to have our triple digit days. And I'm already like, man, can we just be in October already? So I'm looking forward to this little break. It will be nice. It will be beautiful. We'll be on the water. Northern Michigan, if you haven't been, is just unreal. I will say, I don't want to ever go during the winter. That's not my cup of tea. But during the summer, it's absolutely beautiful. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, it's a big one this year for me, doing a week-long trip to Alaska. And that's significant because that's my last state I need to get to. I've been to 49 of the 50 states, and the one that I'm missing is Alaska, because it's so far away and you really only want to go there in the summer. I don't have an interest in going there in the dead of winter where you hardly have any daylight and it's so darn cold. So I've been putting it off, you know, for a summer trip, and I think we're going to finally make it happen this year. I think what I'm most excited about is seeing Denali National Park, because the pictures I've seen of it are just, even the pictures, just jaw-dropping. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like in person, because everywhere I've been where I've seen beautiful pictures, Hawaii is a great example, it's even better in person. So that's what I'm expecting in Alaska this year. I'm really looking forward to it. It's finally scratching that last state off my list, and I'm gonna have to come up with a new goal, because that's been my goal for so long, is visit all 50 states. So what's next? I don't know. I'll have to figure it out.
Puerto Rico, maybe.
Maybe, yeah, I'd get all to the territories, or maybe start adding more. I haven't done a lot of international traveling, so maybe start making a new list. I'm not sure I can ever get to all the countries, but do a little more international traveling next.
All right, Joe, you got something. You got something in that brain of yours. Come on, man.
You know, my aunt, I'm not even kidding, she used to say, why do I need to go anywhere else in the summer when I have the Jersey Shore right here? So I ain't going anywhere this summer, Sean.
No, so we'll all come to the shore. You can show us around the Ocean City Boardwalk. We'll go to Wonderland Pier. We'll get some custard and some popcorn.
Manco pizza.
You can buy the beach tags, and it'll be a grand time. How about that?
Yeah. My asterisk is, I did go away late April into early May, so I don't really have any big trips. I'm going to Saratoga, New York, one weekend in August for a bachelor party. So there's that.
That absolutely counts. That absolutely counts.
That's what I got.
We're going up to a rock concert in Northern Virginia later on this summer. The other big trip, we're going back to Penn State for the Central Pennsylvania Festival of the Arts. But we're going to keep our big trip for the fall, and that's Vegas. More on that, as they say, at a later episode. But, you know, sometimes you have the trip, you have to just up and go, and there's not a lot of planning. So we thought we'd talk with Jen Carfagno, meteorologist at the Weather Channel for more than 25 years, who repeatedly has to go on the road very quickly or in the air very quickly to cover everything from phenomenal snow in the Sierras to sometimes just the party in Punxsutawney for Groundhog Day. Jen's originally from suburban Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. She's a Penn State grad and a recurring host of the Weather Geeks podcast, just down the proverbial dial. So with that in mind, here's our conversation with Dew Point diva, Jen Carfagno. Jen Carfagno, thank you for taking the time and speaking with us on the Across the Sky podcast. You know, you've been with the Weather Channel more than 20 years now, and one of the things that kind of got my mind going for to have you on as a guest was when we had that massive late season snow in the Sierras. And I had to imagine you had to just pick up and fly across the country from Atlanta. Walk us through the prep for that. And then you've got to find a place to do a live shot that's not buried in feet of snow. So take us a little bit behind the scenes on how that kind of stuff comes together.
Yeah, share the meteorology magic of TV in the weather. Thank you all for having me, by the way. I'm excited to be talking with you guys. So I've actually been at the Weather Channel 26 years now, June 1st, my 26th anniversary. And I haven't been going out live for that many. I guess it started maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but not right from the start. And it sort of takes a while before, you know, you're ready to go out for the Weather Channel. And I received zero training. All of a sudden, there was an ice storm. That was my first storm. And they said, go. And I did, of course. And so then over the years, I've learned a lot. So fast forward to this recent big Sierra snowstorm that we had late winter, early spring. I was on air talking about forecasts, and I guess I did a really good job of it because I got a call. This was about 11:45 a.m., and they said, you need to get to Truckee by tonight. So this involved me finishing the show that I was on and going home to pack for a winter storm and finding a flight and finding an air a rental car, finding a place to stay, and not really worrying about where we're going to do lives yet, but being close enough that we figured the next day we weren't going to be in a blizzard, that we would have a few moments, you know, a beat or two to find a live location. But that happened. I'm packing and booking. And oh, by the way, my daughter forgot her cleats for soccer that same day and she needed me to drop them off at school. So it is often a scramble. But I'm not sure I would have it anyway, because I do get energized by there's a lot of enthusiasm in wanting to go out in the field. And so getting to be a part of that is pretty cool.
Well, expand on that a little bit, because I think of this year and I know the phenomenal snow they get. I haven't lived it there. You know, the only time I was ever out in the Sierra, it was summer. And you see these huge sticks on the side of the road, thinking the snow goes up this high.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us in the East who really have not experienced that kind of volume of snow, can you talk people through what that experience might be like, navigating it and working through that in that situation?
And it really, the decision of where to fly into played a role in what they had on the ground played a role in that decision. So I needed a flight last minute, and looking at maps, I could either fly to Sacramento and drive 2 hours to Truckee, or I can fly to Reno and drive about 45 minutes, maybe a little bit less, but neither one was ideal. There was no direct flight into Reno, and then there was a flight to Salt Lake City that sold out literally as I was trying to book it. So my only option was Sacramento. And so then I had to just sort of assume that the roads were going to be clear, because we're coming up over Donner Pass to try to get to Truckee. Once the blizzard hit, that stretch of roadway closed for days. So I knew that obviously we weren't in the blizzard yet, but I didn't know what the state of the roads were for the winter, because I don't routinely follow that, right? I'm not driving out there routinely. So, I checked CalDOT and luckily things were good. But I too, as I was driving out there, saw the big snow stakes on I-80, and I realized, you know, what I was getting myself into. When we got to town, by the time we got to Truckee, it was close to midnight, maybe a little bit after. we stopped. So I was with a producer and a photographer. Me and the producer drove together, photographer drove separate, but we didn't want to have too many vehicles there. These are this kind of thinking that we get into. But when you're in a snowstorm, there's always, you know, you don't want to get stuck somewhere. There's limited amount of vehicles available for rent too that have four-wheel drive. We wanted to have that as well. So we stopped for some supplies on the way. That's always key with these remote live shots is you need to have meals for a couple of days because you don't know if you're, and you need to have meals that you don't need to cook or refrigerate too. So it's kind of like camping in a way. I like camping, so that's good. So we stopped and got supplies at the grocery store, and I was picky because I would like to have fresh fruit, and the first store we went to didn't have any, so we had to go to another one. But we get to Truckee, and the hotel that we wanted to stay with was pricey, and so we just negotiated. Like, you're about to get a blizzard, and everyone is going to cancel. No one's going to come in with the reservation, so you're going to have empty rooms. And so they worked with us, and we decided just to ask for permission later after that negotiation.
When you're at the Weather Channel, you show up, you tell them there's going to be a blizzard. Do you get like a reaction like, oh, this is serious? Or they're like, yeah, we know.
Well, in Truckee, they knew. They are very in tune to the weather. I don't think they realized how much the town was going to shut down.
Yeah.
The whole area shut down for days. People think it snows up there. It does. But this was a big snowstorm. We picked up. It was hard to measure because the wind was blowing it around. But in Truckee, where I was, it was 4 to 5 feet of snow in just 2 days. That's a lot of snow. That's, I mean, up to my chin almost.
And Jen, before we get into more stories, I want to go back to your background. How did you wind up at the Weather Channel? Where were you before the Weather Channel? What got you interested in meteorology in the first place? And then how did you wind up at the Weather Channel?
Well, that's a unique story because not many people get to do this. But I actually interned at the Weather Channel, which you did too. And I came back full time after my senior year at Penn State. And I have been there ever since. And I have worked many different jobs. At first, I just did graphics and data type, and the industry has changed a lot. When I first started, we were having to look up counties in a Microsoft Access database and make sure the cable head end would get the right warnings in case they were in a different county than people lived. So things we had to do things like that. We couldn't automate it back then. We were hand forecasting everything. So I used to do temperature forecasting for the country. Precip forecasting was drawing on a map. And then the numbers would get extracted based on the colors that I drew. And so your mountain forecast was as good as my topography knowledge and my drawing of that topography. So things evolved while I was there. And I had a few different jobs before I went on camera full time. So I've been doing that for about 15 years on camera, but I've been at the Weather Channel for 26 years.
And what was there a certain event that oftentimes comes with meteorology? Not always. That's why I want to see if it was an event for you that really got you interested in meteorology and wouldn't make you pursue it. Or was it just kind of a general interest of weather? And when did it hit for you? When did you know you want to be a meteorologist?
It seems like my whole life, there was tons of weather events that always sparked my interest. I grew up in southeastern Pennsylvania in the suburbs of Philly. And we literally had everything, big snowstorms, ice storms. There was a tornado in Limerick, Pennsylvania, not far from where I was. I remember big hail one time, sitting at the window, just reading my weather books because I had them at a young age because I was always interested. And, you know, my parents are scrambling to get the cars in the garage. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's really cool. How is that happening? But I wanted to be a pilot, really. And my eighth grade homeroom teacher had his pilot's license for small planes. And he shared with me some of his manuals, and there was a lot of weather. And I think that actually really cemented it. It's like, well, I like weather. Maybe I should learn weather. And I like math. And my math teacher also encouraged me. So there was just all these different things that sort of pushed me to meteorology. But everybody sort of knew I would be a meteorologist. All my friends growing up looked to me for the weather. They'd ask me. I was a lifeguard. The guy who ran the pool got me a sling psychrometer so I could take dew point measurements. This is even back when I was 13 years old. You know, everyone knew I was into it.
So, Jen, I want to go back to the traveling and, you know, the different events that you cover. So they're obviously going to send you to the most impactful ones, right? And so they're all going to have some kind of effect on you. Like you just said with Truckee, it was like 4 or 5 feet of snow. But in the amount of time that you've been doing this, what would you say is probably your most memorable of all of these events that you have covered?
There's so many that are memorable for different ways. I mean, that snow was something else. I feel very lucky to have experienced that kind of storm. The snow was just so intense, and just the wind, everything about it, just seeing that snow, the walls of snow along Interstate 80, it's hard to imagine the atmosphere did that in just like a 2 or 3 day time frame. But the events that sit the hardest with me, or maybe the most intensely with me, are the tornadoes. I've never been out covering an outbreak before, so not storm tracking, but I've gone out many times after the fact to tornado damage, and it's really hard. I actually still think about almost everyone that I've met out at these storms. I see their home has been damaged. Some of them have lost loved ones. I feel bad. We go in, we report, which I do think is incredibly important to share their story, but I feel bad that I can't stay and do more to help. You know, I feel sort of like an ambassador of Mother Nature, being a meteorologist. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. It's one of those things where, and we've talked about this before, the four of us, you know, you have these big events and then they happen. And then sometimes people forget, you know, and not because people that live elsewhere, I should say. So you see a tornado that happened, like, for example, here in Oklahoma, we just had a really big one that hit Barnstall, just about 30 miles north of where I live. And it was an EF4. And, you know, you get so much coverage that you see nationally or locally. But, you know, even the nationally, it kind of the next thing happens, right? So then you go on to the next thing. And I think those people sometimes they, you know, it's you don't want them to feel like they've been forgotten. And I think maybe that's what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. And they're not forgotten. But there is the next thing that has to be covered, too. And so it's, I guess, just a part of our jobs. You know, we do have to move on to the forecast, actually, because I think that is the most important thing we do is provide a forecast so that people have the information they need to stay safe.
Yeah, and it shows. So, you know, I'm watching the Weather Channel, right? And I see your face and a number of other meteorologists' face on the map showing where they're going to be or where they are during the storm, which I think is a really cool idea. So, like, what goes into those planning meetings in terms of who's covering where, who's going to be in what spot? I know it's going to depend on the event, but, you know, what does one of those meetings look like to determine who's going where?
A little bit of it, who's available and who wants to go. But I can tell you that most of us want to go to everything because we all like being in the weather. It has definitely made me a better meteorologist and communicator by being in the weather. But it's just like moving like dots on a map. You know, you're just like, well, let's see if this person's here. They can be live during these hours. You want to try to match people, OCMs or on-camera meteorologists up with the time slot that they're normally in, if you can. You want to try to make sure you're covering when the weather's hitting. And so if that doesn't line up, then you have to adjust again. So the logistics are really quite amazing, I have to say. There's a couple of managers that really take hold of it and organize it all. And then word gets out. So I don't actually usually get involved in the planning. I just get told where to go.
Gotcha. Okay. So could you volunteer? Like, oh, you know, like, yeah, you know, you said you're from Pennsylvania. Yeah. If there was something in PA, you know, you'd be like, hey, like, I know PA. That's my stopping ground.
I will. Yes.
I make a request for that.
We will all do that. We will all say, hey, this is a big event. I'd like to go. And by the way, I'd like to go here.
Right.
And maybe you get there. Maybe you don't. There have been times where I get sent where I wanted to go.
Yeah. I kind of envisioned everybody around this big table with the big whiteboard in the conference room and a map. All right, you're going to go here. You're going to go here. We're going to do it this way. We're going to do live shots staggered at this time, dot, da, 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 da. Is it that organized or is it a little more piecemeal?
It's that organized, but it's not as big as you think. It's a big room with a big table and a whiteboard, but it's really just a couple of managers. You can't have too many cooks in the kitchen to do this kind of planning. You really have to, you'll have a couple of minds that are working on this, the logistics, the meteorology, and then, you know, send everyone out. Because think about in our crews, there's the on-camera meteorologist. Then you got the photographer, you've got the producer. Often we've got some of our audio, security. You know, that would be a lot of people to have in one place.
Yeah. So about how big is the production staff, the supportive staff? I mean, obviously we know there's a certain amount of meteorologists, both on-camera meteorologists. You've got meteorology producers as well. But when we think about other support staff, I mean, is it all full time? Do you have to subcontract out a little bit? I mean, how big does it get?
It's both. And, you know, when we have a storm like even to some extent, some of the severe that we've had this spring, we work with a lot of freelancers and contractors across the country, and we have staff as well. So, you know, we have, I would say we have enough either on full time or available to us as freelancers so that we can cover the weather. I always feel like we have enough staff.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Jen Carfagno and talk about some of the more fun trips she's had when we continue with the Across the Sky podcast. Hey, everyone. Across the Sky is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard by severe weather. Choose Weather Call. Get precise, location-specific alerts via phone, text, or email. With over a decade of experience, WeatherCall delivers pinpoint accuracy for your exact address, ensuring no surprises. Take charge and stay prepared when ominous skies loom. Explore the WeatherCall difference today. Visit weathercallservices.com/LeeEnterprises and safeguard yourself, your business, or any school that matters to you. You can also find that link in our Across the Sky show notes, weathercallservices.com/LeeEnterprises. And we're back on the Across the Sky podcast with the Weather Channel's Jen Carfagno, talking about all the trips she's been doing with the Weather Channel over the last two decades plus. And Jen, watching your coverage over the past several years, more and more as we get toward Groundhog Day, we see the bigger celebrations coming back. Obviously, when there was the pandemic, it was much more muted, right? But it seems to be coming back. So tell me a little about your experiences covering Groundhog Day, because it really looks like it's a big celebration there.
It is a huge celebration. I am at all of all the people that come in from not just locally in Pennsylvania and not just across the country, but from around the world to celebrate Groundhog Day. But I got to go back to my very first one that I attended. I was at Penn State. It was in 1994, because it was, 94. And, well, I guess it might have been 95, actually, by the time I went. I had no idea. I thought we were going to a small little town for, like, just like the movie, a couple of people, you know, that would walk down to the knob in the morning. And there was a whole fleet of school buses that take you from the downtown grocery store parking lot to the knob. There was free hot chocolate. Everybody was so friendly. It was amazing. And it was truly a big party, but in a very, like, good-natured way, very family-friendly way. So that kind of started my love of Groundhog Day. And then fast forward to the Weather Channel and Dr. Greg Forbes, who was our severe weather expert on the Weather Channel. He was also one of my professors at Penn State. He was getting inducted into the Punxsutawney Weather Center Hall of Fame, or Weather Discovery Center Hall of Fame. And so they sent me to go cover the induction. And as it turns out, we had all kinds of weather issues. There was an ice storm. We couldn't get out. Our live truck couldn't get in. We ended up having to use Ustream. I don't know if y'all remember that, but we used Ustream to do some live coverage. And we stayed with a family because there's no hotels in Punxsutawney. And so when I got that assignment and they said, okay, you'll do this, you'll stay with the Cassidys. And I was like, wait, what? No hotel? What? This is weird. It's like an exchange program. Okay, I'm open to it. And I stay with them every year since. And I've been going back. So that was in, 2009 or 10, I think. And so I couldn't imagine it any other way. I feel like they're family. I feel like people in town that I don't necessarily know well, I don't, you know, necessarily go have dinner with them, but we recognize each other because every year we're coming back. And it's such a great midwinter experience.
So Jen, I've got to know, how did they come across this family? Like, how is this family nominated to be the host family? Who's actually making the arrangements at the Weather Channel? All these travel arrangements for you, not just for you, but the photographer and the producer. So how did it come about that they realized there are no hotels, you're going to be with a family? How did that exactly happen?
So most travel, 100% of travel at the Weather Channel, you're kind of on your own and you figure it out. But Punxsutawney is a special case. And because in Punxsutawney, the Weather Discovery Center was hosting the induction of Greg Forbes into their Hall of Fame, they were the ones that set this up for us. And so it was actually the Cassidy family, Jim Cassidy. He was a director of the Punxsutawney Weather Center. And so he said, you're welcome to stay with us. And we said, great. And that's kind of how it happened. It's not as not as official as it all seems like, you know, it would be coming from a big organization like the Weather Channel. But every year since then, since we've met so many families, you know, a photographer stays with one or it's someone's property. Producers might need to stay at another. A lot of us stay at the Cassidy's house. And we stay up late. We play cards. We were playing Taco Cat Pizza this time. It truly is like going home to visit family once a year.
Okay, so we talked about the most impactful type of events, or I should say weather events that you've covered. But if you had to choose between hurricane coverage, severe weather coverage, tornado, ice, or snow, how would you rate them? One being the one you would want to go to and four being maybe the one you wouldn't want to do.
I find snowstorms really fun. And if everyone behaves, those storms are not that deadly. You know, the stressful thing about the severe weather is it's almost always so destructive to life and property. So I find all the storm clouds fascinating, as we all do, but it's so stressful. So that's the bottom of my list. Snow would be top, then hurricanes. I feel really useful in hurricane coverage. I think our presence, all meteorologists' live presence makes a big difference in gaining attention of the public as to this is a story that needs to be listened to. This is an area that's at risk. So I feel like that's critical. And then ice storms kind of fall in between all of those because they're just hard to tell on TV. You know, it's like you don't see the big piles of snow. You just see a glaze of ice and you're trying to measure it, you know, around the branch. And it's a hard story to tell.
Yeah. And gosh, ice is, I'll tell you, living in this part of the country, you know, we get our fair share of ice sometimes, and it is just, it's a nuisance. It is bad. I mean, if you know what I mean? It's one of those things that will shut everything down because you get just a tiny bit of it and it just shuts down the streets. So it turns into a nuisance quickly.
And doing live coverage, you can't really go anywhere. So you're kind of stuck. You pick your hotel and then you're stuck within a little bit of a walking radius. There's not far to go.
Yeah, very true.
Back to the walking radius, when you're covering hurricanes and tropical systems, you know, there's always that big, well, you know, the eye wall is coming and you need to find a safe place to do a live shot. I've seen a couple of times, and I don't know if it was specifically you or somebody else on staff that were like, we're not going out there. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much do you run up against that in tropical coverage in terms of, you want to show nature doing what it is doing, but at the same time, you need to be mindful of your own safety. How much of that do you run up against in that coverage?
I think we have amazing support for getting into a safe location. I mean, nobody at the Weather Channel wants to see us in a precarious spot. First of all, they care about our safety, but it just wouldn't make good TV if we look ridiculous out there. You know, we want to show the weather, but we need to be safe. Hurricane Matthew, that was what, in 2016? I was in Daytona Beach. And that particular storm, I was nervous because the models had, first of all, it was still Cat 5 at this point. And the models, many of them had it coming right towards me, making landfall. And we were on the barrier island. And I was the night before, I'm like, I think we should go in. I think we should cross the bridge. I don't want to get stuck here for days without power, without any resources. And we talked a lot about it. And, you know, we talk amongst ourselves, too. Cantori was down. I think he was in, West Palm or somewhere down there. But he was down in Southeast Florida. And, you know, we all kind of agreed the trend was it's not going to make landfall here as a Cat 5. It's possible, but probably not. And it happened to be at my hotel, the SWAT team was staying. So I felt safe in that sense. We were at an older hotel that had been through a lot of storms that was pretty solidly built. And so we also had a big porch area that was going to provide solid protection from me being out in the weather. So I wasn't even standing on the beach for this one. I was standing undercover, actually, being able to show the storm. And so all of those factors came into play to everyone to agree that I was in a safe spot. But I did my live coverage in the morning, and the weather continued to be bad there, even though it was a category three that paralleled the coast, never made landfall here. We had wind gusts of 87 at a nearby weather station. They wanted me to do live shots on the street side of the building later in the afternoon. And I went out and I just saw too much debris flying. And I just said no. And they said, okay. You know, so there might be push back and forth, but in the end, we always err on the side of safety.
Yeah, and we talked so much about being out in the field and going around, but I'm curious, you know, taking it closer to home in the Atlanta area where the Weather Channel is, what are you doing in the city or the community to promote weather education? Do you go to schools and talk with kids? Are you going out to community days? What do you do, I guess, locally to promote the weather as well as talking about it out in the field across the country?
Yeah, I love to do school talks. I haven't done as many recently. I did a lot before the pandemic, and especially in the earlier part of my career. And then when my kids were in grade school, of course, you know, I did ran through all their classes and their friends' classes. And now I do some hit or miss. The interesting thing is the Weather Channel is a national network. And so we are not as well known in the community here as like a local TV station. So we don't get as many requests as you might think. Most of what I do now is actually Zoom stuff. And so I'll do a Zoom call with a school in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, you know, wherever. And it's kind of neat because then I could have a studio in the Weather Channel behind me and then take them on a little Zoom tour of the studio. So that's a neat thing to do, too.
Okay, cool. So we've got all that serious stuff behind us now. I want to talk to you about your love for country music. All right. Because yep. You and I are Instagram pals. And it's just all about Kenny Chesney. I saw you got to meet him recently. Is that correct?
Yes, I finally got to meet him. We've been friends for a couple of years, actually. You know, he's a friend of the Weather Channel's. You know, of course, he loves the islands. He's got a house in St. John, and whenever tropical weather threatens, you know, I'm sure he pays attention to us on the Weather Channel. But in particular, after Irma, you know, we reached out to his people. They reached out regardless into sharing of information. And so that's kind of how we got the connection. And he invited me to be a part of No Shoes Radio, which is his radio station on Sirius XM, his guest DJ hours that they did after the pandemic or during the pandemic, because they needed some content. If you've ever listened to No Shoes Radio, it's all about the tailgating and the live shows, and there were no live shows. And so they started these guest DJ hours, and I was number 7, I think, of guest DJs invited. And that's really how we made the connection. And that was such a thrill to be a part of. And so all these years, we've shared texts, we've talked about various things, including weather and marine stories. I have a huge interest in the coral reefs and some of the marine heat waves that we've had. So I've shared some of that with him as well. And long story short, finally, this was the live show that we were able to meet up backstage, and I finally could give him a handshake and a hug and say hello in person. So that was so exciting.
It's always neat to meet the person that you've talked to and thought about so much, to actually meet him in person. It's always a great experience. But I want to come back to your kids. You mentioned your kids. And so I wonder how they feel about you being on the Weather Channel. Do their friends ever give them a hard time, or do their friends think it's really cool? And how do they feel about their mom being on the Weather Channel? Is it something that kind of embarrasses them, or they tell everybody about it? And then how do you balance the work-life balance? I mean, when you have to go on these trips at the spur of the moment, how do they handle that, and how do you handle it as a mom?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'll answer the first part first. I think they like it. For a long time, I don't think they even really knew that it was special, because they saw everyone on FaceTime and everybody's, you know, on a screen. So it didn't matter to them what I did. I worked a lot of weekends in the first part of their lives. And so I wasn't there on weekend mornings to do like the pancakes and the soccer practices. My husband did all that. But they saw me on TV. So I was sort of, you know, there with them. Now they think it's cool, and their friends think it's cool, and they ask me for forecast all the time. We're in graduation season, so I've got to, you know, make sure the rain is going to stay away from a couple graduation parties this weekend. And I think just the fact that the Weather Channel, because we're a national network, we're able to cover all of the big stories everywhere. It's the headlines that they hear about, even if it's not a local story, you know, like the snowstorm in Truckee. So I think they think it's cool that I get to be a part of that. The work-life balance, is challenging. There's been a lot of missed things, but there's a lot of things where I scrambled to get back to too. But I missed my daughter's 10th birthday for Hurricane Matthew. And I remember when I got that assignment, and I wanted the assignment, but I was like, I need to come back Friday. And they're like, oh, sure. Knowing the hurricane was going to hit Thursday, and there's no way. We all knew that there was no way I was going to get back, but at least I sort of had that promise. And it was a skating party. And, you know, like, I'm sure she doesn't even remember that I wasn't there or even noticed at the time, because it was a busy one. But it's just kind of a reality of this business where I knew I was going to have to miss something. So I try not to miss the really, really important things. It's hard, I would say. You're never in balance. You have to give the attention to what needs it the most at that time. And what everything I've tried to tell my kids is, my job's important to me. I really enjoy it. I get a lot of satisfaction from it. It provides for our family. And I want them to have that same passion for things in their lives. So it's okay if not everything gets 100% all the time. It'll balance in the end, just not always at that moment.
So do any of your kids want to pursue the family business and be a meteorologist like you?
Neither. Neither want to be involved in TV at all. But both seem to have an interest in science. So we'll see. We'll see.
I have a 5-year-old daughter that thinks she wants to be a meteorologist, but she also thinks she wants to be a ballerina at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think a chef. So, you know, we're at that.
I think at that age, my youngest wanted to be Hello Kitty. So they could be anything.
It could be anything they want. That's exactly right.
You know, we talked a little bit about how much the business has changed, you know, specifically, but in your 20 plus years there, where have you seen the biggest leaps forward, aside from, you know, hand plotting maps and doing that kind of stuff? But as computers have gotten so amazingly fast, what has been the biggest change, just say, the last 5 or 10 years?
The amount of information available. Computer forecasts, computer model forecasts have gotten better. Weather forecasts are better. But I think it's in the breadth that we can provide in weather communication now. I'm thinking back to my early days on camera, where all I really had were the observations from the airport, some maps that were printed. I had to wait for the next ones to print. Now I have so much information at my fingertips, and not just the forecast, but perspective about the forecast. Like, is this really a record stretch of 95 degree days? The climate angle, and of course, the perspective that we can give with that. Information about local communities and how the weather is affecting their events. I can get that on the internet just by searching it up. We couldn't do that in the beginning. You know, I think back to maybe like the late 2000s and local TV station websites started putting stuff like that on there. But they're, you know, it's really only in the last 10, 15 years that we have this plethora of information available to really make a robust TV presentation.
And Jen, kind of extending on that, like, what's the next big thing for the Weather Channel when it comes to live weather coverage? And side note, too, you said you do your own travel booking. I'm sure some airline there must be treating you very nicely. Maybe Delta Sky Miles or something.
Well, in Atlanta, Delta is our hub, I have to say. I am a Delta snob. I'm picky. I like to stay with them. And they do treat all their customers great. They don't know who I am when I get on there, but they're fantastic. Well, AI, you know, for everyone, but I don't know what that looks like. We all, I'm sure, are curious. I think AI is going to get implemented within the weather enterprise so subtly that it won't be like a drastic change. I think it'll get in to maybe the writing of forecasts, or it'll get into the forecasting itself to speed up computer power. Right now, a lot of our focus is on the immersive technology that we're using. The 3D immersive, and you know, that's not AI, but it sort of gives you that same experience. Like, we're able to recreate storm surge flooding in a green space, and I think it really helps with communication. It grabs attention.
Yeah, that stuff, the ones I've seen are tremendous. I mean, I've seen the ones for flash flooding, wildfires, coastal flooding, the whole bit, and all of these are really, really good, and honestly, people have a hard time visualizing what that will look like when we tell them what a weather hazard's going to be. And I think it really does a good job without without being cheesy. So many times these things are done and they're kind of cheesy, but y'all are right in it. And a huge kudos to the production staff and the writers who put those things together, because they're exceptional. So good on all of y'all for putting those things together. So as we wrap up, anything else that you want to share? Where can people find you in the Weather Channel space digitally, other than just seeing you in the mornings?
Yes, amongst all the socials, and it's actually quite easy everywhere. I'm just Jen Carfagno, Carfagno. So that's Instagram and Twitter, X, and on Facebook. I think it ends up sending you to TWC Jen Carfagno, but you can just put in Jen Carfagno, and I'm verified there. There's a lot of fake accounts. I'm sure you guys have run into this too. It's very frustrating, and I report them all that I come across, but I don't want people to get taken by someone who's maybe asking for money or, you know, trying to do something illicit. But also, I just, you know, if they think they're communicating with someone other than me, that doesn't seem right, you know. So I am verified on Facebook and Instagram. X is what it is. I'm not.
All right, Jen, thank you so much for taking the time with us on the Across the Sky podcast. Best wishes to you and everybody at the Weather Channel for the important work that you're doing, communicating weather and keeping people safe for the elements. So thanks so much for joining us.
John, thank you. Thank you all. This is fun.
And we'll be right back with some closing thoughts on the Across the Sky podcast.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Attention, comrades.
This spring,
the world feels different now.
A dystopian masterpiece.
This is Big Brother.
Becomes a reality.
Time to finally do this.
Winston, I'm scared.
For me to commit my thoughts, my crimes to you.
George Orwell's 1984. Starring Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, Andrew Scott, and Tom Hardy.
No, wait!
Oh. This is it. It's over already.
Listen on Audible.
It is always fun having conversations with the folks who have to go cover the weather, you know, at a distance. I know some of us have done a little more of this than others, but, you know, go get on a plane this evening and fly to California. That's not something I've had to deal with very much. I really appreciate her sharing some of those insights. And I did not realize how much of that the individual meteorologist still kind of have to do on their own.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I thought it would have been all booked and planned out. I mean, and also, and I should have asked this too, like getting there is one thing, but how do you know when you're going home?
No, I was going to say, it sounds like sometimes she doesn't. She said she missed her daughter's 10th birthday, and it was kind of one of those things she was hoping to, but, you know, Mother Nature hits, and then you're kind of there, just, you know, at their beck and call, but you know what I mean? You're just kind of there, and you're just having to cover it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like I said, you know, like she said, those Delta Sky miles, you know, really coming in with all the traveling, but it's got to be exciting in a way, right? But also, like, don't know when I'm coming back at the same time either. God. But it's great. I mean, it's a great career, and it's so exciting to get around. And, you know, I mean, you know, we're all covering, you know, markets across the country, but to actually be in there and to see what's going on every day, you know, when there's significant weather, as she said, it gives you an appreciation for these different climates that we have and how to communicate them better when you're actually in those elements.
And I loved her talking about her background too, you know, how, again, she was one of those lucky ones that got to start at the Weather Channel. You know, not many people, I had the chance to intern there, as she alluded to, but she made the jump. I since moved around. I was not able to get back in the door at the Weather Channel, but she actually was able to go there and like work her way up too, like starting out behind the scenes and then eventually, you know, given the opportunity to go on camera. So getting to hear, you know, her background and the fact that she's been there for so long and has covered, again, covering the weather on a national scale for that long. I mean, we could have if we had more time, I'm sure she has some more great stories. I mean, we just scratched the surface, I'm sure, of the things that she's experienced, the storms that she's covered. So it was great to be able to chat with her for a little bit and get a couple of those stories.
Okay, so for Across My Sky this week, this coming weekend is the Greek Festival here in Richmond, and there's just fabulous food this coming weekend in Richmond, Virginia. I'm very excited about the Greek Festival. So that's what's going on in my sky, across my sky this week. What else have you guys got going on?
You know, like sometimes like there's news, but it's not really news. It's just something you already knew. And you're wondering like, why is it even out there in that space?
Go on.
Well, USA Today did the 10 best awards, and they did best gas station for food, and Royal Farms was number one. Like, that's not even a question that Royal Farms is number one. It is the best place for food ever. They are the goat of chicken, best fried chicken. I honestly, best fried chicken, I think best fried chicken I've ever had at Royal Farms. You go in, they have the touch screen, they got the chicken right there, they got the drums, they got the breasts, they got the thighs, all sitting there. It's so juicy. I don't know how they do it. And very, now it's very fried in the sense that it just has like that nice oily glaze on it. I tend to like my fried chicken a little bit on the oilier side. Beautiful thing. It wasn't really news to me. I'm glad the goat of chicken got the recognition that it already knew it.
Dude, I'm telling Popeyes on you.
You can tell Popeyes on me. I don't care. I'll tell Popeyes is good too, but it ain't Royal Farms, man. It ain't Royal Farms. And I'm happy that they've expanded from Maryland, Delaware, into New Jersey, and has crept closer into my life, because my life has gotten better the closer Royal Farms has been to my life.
There's one just 2 miles from my house. I haven't gone yet. So now I feel like I kind of have to go so I can give you a report, Joe.
After the Greek festival, you know?
Yeah, God, that sounds very Greek. That will go wonderful.
Put it in the gyro.
Okay, this must be a Northeast Mid-Atlantic thing, because I've never heard of Royal Farms.
Same. I was going to ask,
ever heard of them.
Where does Bucky's land on that list?
No Bucky's here.
I haven't been to Bucky's. I've heard about the roast beef sandwiches. I know how much they pay all their workers there. So I can't judge Bucky's yet. But when I go on my West Texas road trip, there's Bucky's out in West Texas, right? Maybe like Laredo.
I don't know if they're West Texas. You will hit one though in Texas before you get out west, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
We're gonna get our first Bucky's in Virginia, I think, in the summer of 25 or 26 along Interstate 81. I mean, I've already read it. It's a big thing. So it is a coming. It's just not here yet, but it's a coming. That's for sure.
You know what? Speaking of Bucky's too, I forgot this. You brought up a good point, Sean. So they actually put out billboards in New Jersey that said the nearest Bucky's is 500 miles away. And everyone's like, does this mean a Bucky's is coming to New Jersey? So NJ.com, shout out to them. They actually called Bucky's and they said, are you bringing a Bucky's to New Jersey? And they said they can't do it. They can't bring a Bucky's to New Jersey.
They can't?
Because who's going to be pumping all the gas at all these gas stations there? They can't have that many workers there. They said they can't do it. It doesn't fit their business model. So no Bucky's for New Jersey.
That's
wild.
Doesn't fit the Texas business model. Got it.
No, it doesn't, man. Listen, they got like 100 pumps. How many pumps do they got at Bucky's? Like 100 or something like that? You're going to need like 10 people just to work the gas station.
That's wild.
Be a boom for the economy.
Y'all have got to learn to pump your gas around there.
Listen, I've gone now 4 weeks without pumping my own gas. It's been phenomenal 4 weeks.
Well, I just did some pumping of the gas for my Memorial Day trip down to Central Illinois. And for Across My Sky, the one thing I will say is how different the rest of Illinois is compared to the Chicago area. I mean, everybody knows Chicago and Chicagoland and how built up it is, and so many buildings. I mean, the suburbs of Chicago seem to go on forever. But once you finally get out of the suburbs, the rest of Illinois, very empty. Like a totally different world, but you are in the same state. But boy, being down in Central Illinois, such a different scene. And you have to keep reminding yourself, this is the same state that Chicago's in, you know, and it's only 3-4 hours away, but looks so different, so much more empty space. I can say Chicago's got plenty more room to expand. Though I'm not sure everybody in Central, I think they like the way things are. They don't want the Chicago sprawl, but there's still a lot of open land in Illinois. So if you're in Chicago, you've only experienced one part of Illinois. Central Illinois, very different from the Chicago area, but nice in its own way.
Cool. Mine's short and sweet. It's Memorial Day weekend, which meant that the pools officially opened. The weather is hot enough that they probably could have opened, several weekends ago. But that means that we're now into my least favorite season that we've discussed before, just because it's all the heat and the sweat and the sunscreen and all the kids, and it's a lot to deal with. And I'm just looking forward to October, which is Joe's favorite month.
Oh, absolutely not. Listen, Green Day, when they say wake me up when September ends, I need them to put another verse on there and say in October too, because October is not my month. We could have 11 months out of the year, I'd remove October. Although it is my dad and my sister's birthday, so I have to.
If you're curious, go back and listen to our top 10 things to know about fall, and you'll get the whole story about
good plug.
Why Joe does not like fall and especially does not like October.
Yeah, because, the one thing, though, that's the end of hurricane season, all right? And since we're getting toward the beginning of hurricane season, next week, guys, we've got excited to add the director of the National Hurricane Center. Mike Brennan is going to be joining us to talk about hurricane season. Folks there with NOAA, and basically anybody who does hurricane seasonal forecasting, we're all in kind of agreement here. It's expected to be a very busy season. But he'll talk about what that actually means for individuals as we go forward into the season. Of course, later this summer, we'll revisit the weather at the Battle of Gettysburg. We'll also talk about how the warming climate is impacting home runs in Major League Baseball. So a full slate ahead of us as we get into the summer. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Across the Sky podcast. If you like it, as they say, rate and review us and share where you can. And we thank you so much for doing so. So for Matt Hollander, Kirsten Lang, and Joe Martucci at, of course, the beautiful New Jersey Shore, I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk with you next week.
You can achieve platinum status in the fuel rewards program at Shell twice as fast by filling up six times with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Right now, you can fuel up at your nearest Shell. So make a pit stop this morning and fill your tank with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Tap the screen now to learn more about platinum status and the fuel rewards program, or download the Shell app today. Platinum status is earned with 12 fill-ups over 3 months, 10-gallon minimum per fill-up at participating Shell locations. Terms apply. Visit www.fuelrewards.com/status.